Chapter 20. The Street of Seven Dreams. The Limehouse Basin was crowded, as always, and a great steamship was being unloaded, stevedores lowering long full sacks into barges for transfer along the Regent's Canal, thence to be transported throughout the country. Lascars in pantaloons and baggy jackets, heads covered in flat cylindrical skullcaps, dragged a rope as thick as their arms, working it into a giant coil. A gang of perhaps 20 black longshoremen, stripped to the waist, torsos glistening in the blaze of the sun, hauled the Alice Rose, a foremast windjammer, back to the pier that she had overshot. Land and river swarmed with activity, and countless voices in dozens of different languages and accents competed to be heard above each other and the crash of cargo being dumped on the quayside.
"Is it not inspiring?" Sidney Grice shouted above the hubbub, "to think how many of these creatures could die without anyone caring."
He threw our fare up to the driver, who put it in a cloth bag under his straw hat. "They could have someone who loves them," I argued, taking his arm to clamber onto the cobbles. There was a strong, stale smell coming from the river, and I dreaded to think what it must have been like in the days of the Great Stink, when the Thames was an open sewer, before Joseph Bazalgette built his drains and pumping stations.
"Nonsense," Mr. G. tidied his coat. "Who, for example, could care about this loathsome specimen?"
He poked a ragged but otherwise presentable youth in the chest with his cane.
"Oi!"
"His mother?"
"I doubt he ever had one."
Sidney Grice led me up a narrow street, into a short alley, with a strong smell of rancid butter, and then into a long one stinking of cats, then a series of passageways, each narrower and less salubrious than the previous, the doors either side of us going from painted to patchily painted, to unpainted to broken, to being replaced with sacking hooked over rusty nails. And then we were in a court, deserted except for 5 women squatting in the corner some 40 feet away, shelling peas from a sack into a bucket, and dropping the pods into their grubby aprons.
"Never mind her, darling," one called out. "I can give you a better time."
"The only thing you could give him would be infectious," I called back, and my guardian paused to consider my comment.
"Pulmonary tuberculosis and scabies being the least troubling of her afflictions," he pondered.
"Who you calling scabby?"
The woman spluttered chestily, while her companions clucked in sympathy.
"I am unfamiliar with her cognomen, and have no desire to familiarise myself with it."
Mr. G. raised his stick in salutation.
"Goodbye, repellent and plebeian females. May your lives be abbreviated."
He took my arm, and we turned left down a winding lane.
"A proper gent,"
I heard the woman say, as I dodged a piglet scampering straight towards me.
"Gold, which rag and bone man did he pick her up from?"
One of her companions croaked, to more cackling than any joke ever told before could possibly have merited.
"There you go, causing trouble again,"
my godfather scolded, as we turned down yet another alley. This one hung with lanterns, and the first property bearing a sign, with red Chinese symbols arranged around the words Golden Dragon, also in red. The front door was painted red too, and I was beginning to think the theme somewhat overdone before the door was opened, in response to Sidney Grice's complicated rhythm of knocks, by a Chinaman, very tall compared to those I had seen slaving on the docks, and clad in a red kimono. He bowed and admitted us into a waiting room. The walls, floor and ceiling, the bench and 2 armchairs all coloured deep and dark vermilion. Had there been any windows in this lamp-lit room, I had no doubt what colour the drapes would have been.
"Mr. Glyce,"
the Chinaman put his hands together, hardly visible among the voluminous sleeves of his robe. "And Miss Middleton," I added, in the unlikely instance of anyone being interested, and the Chinaman bowed so low that I could see the long pigtail braided down his back.
"An honour,"
he came up gently.
"What bring you to my humble home?"
Save the theatricals for your customers, Jones,
Mr. G told him sharply.
Your humble abode is a 34-room mansion in Primrose Hill, and even Miss Middleton would not be taken in by your counterfeit Orientalism.
I had more pride than to admit that I had been. The apparently fake Chinaman smiled serenely, his moustaches hanging like bootlaces almost to his chest.
Please, Mr. Glass, in Plymouth Hill I may be who I choose. In the Street of Seven Dreams I am Chang Fu.
This is Grey Dog Lane, my guardian pointed out.
To you, perhaps,
Jones Chang conceded. But your eyes... I looked into them, and they returned my gaze placidly. They look oriental.
I was born with droopy eyes.
Jones gave up his pretense. Oculatosis, I realized.
Is that what it is?
Our host smiled ruefully.
The other children used to call me names.
His mouth tensed as he remembered.
There was nothing I could do, so I decided to put it to my own advantage. I've always been interested in opium since my grandmother introduced me to the habit, but nobody buys from an Englishman.
You are very well spoken, I observed.
Another fraudulent device,
Sidney Grice told me.
Jones was born and raised not 30 yards from here.
We are none of us who we pretend to be, Jones said. I think I am, I objected.
You probably are,
my guardian conceded.
Whereas I do not pretend to be anyone.
His cane shot up under Jones's chin.
Miss Bocking.
Jones jumped, but instantly readopted his inscrutable image.
I don't know nothing about that.
He reverted to his native Cockney. You must know something, I reasoned, or you would have asked who Mr. Grice meant.
A rational remark,
my godfather approved.
Well, I know she came with her friend and left with her friend, but they never said nothing to me.
Jones flapped his wing-like sleeves, and Mr. G blanched but held his ground.
Her friend wore a veil, but lots of women don't want to be recognised.
He sniggered breathily.
Once had a mother sitting next to her daughter, and neither never knew it.
And you did not notice anything unusual on the night Miss Bocking came?
Did he not?
Mr. G wandered to a red lacquered table in the corner and tried the drawer. That was a question.
Then be so charitable as to phrase it as one.
Sidney Grice pulled off his gloves, drawing his breath in sharply as if the process were distressing. Did you notice anything unusual? I tried again.
Nothing,
Jones folded his arms inside his sleeves,
is unusual round here.
What about the men who were with her? I persisted.
I didn't notice them,
Jones assured me placidly, and glanced over his shoulder.
That drawer is locked. I have ascertained that already.
Mr. G wheeled round.
We shall look downstairs now, and you shall remain seated.
He rattled the back spokes of an upright wooden chair.
Here.
Here, who said you could poke around my place?
Jones objected indignantly. My guardian licked his finger and held it up as if checking the direction of the wind.
I was not aware that anybody had,
he answered,
and I certainly did not ask anyone to do so.
He swept off his hat and dropped his gloves one by one into the upturned crown. I scrutinized a red tassel which dangled from an oil lamp hanging from the ceiling, and sniffed it in an attempt to look as if I was doing something, but neither man was paying me any attention. It smelled, as the rest of the room did, of a sickly perfume.
How many police officers would you like to visit you tonight, Dr. Jones?
Sidney Grice stood on tiptoe to look him in the eye. Doctor, I repeated incredulously, and, now that I had their attention, examined the tassel again. Jones shifted his feet.
This is an easier and more lucrative living,
he admitted bashfully before stiffening his sinews.
He is not qualified other than in the art of cheap swindling.
Cheap?
Jones ruffled his robes.
That certificate cost me a fortune.
He tightened the wide silk belt around his waist.
Look, Mr. Grice, I pay to be left alone.
But you do not and never shall pay me to do so,
my guardian reminded him. Jones swished his pigtail crossly.
Oh, very well.
He flapped a wide sleeve.
Behind the head.
A golden dragon smiled toothily all along that bamboo-lined wall, carrying the world in its claws in a pose more reminiscent of an underarm bowler approaching the crease. I slid the end screen aside to reveal a door, and Dr. Jones turned sulkily away.
The Honourable Gentleman will not find anything of interest,
he prophesied in his best cod Mandarin.
I have only ever been to 19 places where I found absolutely nothing of interest.
Sidney Grice took a hair off the fabric.
And in every instance bar one, I was asleep.
He compared the hair to mine, put it on his palm and blew it away.
The last, of course, was Paris.
I opened the door to my guardian's unconcealed chagrin. He had a fondness for doing so in theatrical manners, but I had endured more than enough of his public displays recently. A steep, narrow staircase with solid walls to either side led down away from us.
You will not lock us in, I said, and that was not a question.
Never entered my head.
Jones jerked his neck forward like a strutting chicken.
Then present me with the key,
my guardian said firmly. Jones seemed about to protest, but realizing there was no point, brought a hand out of his voluminous sleeve and handed it over.
One word of warning.
Mr. G paused with his foot on the top step.
If anything unpleasant should befall myself and my assistant down there, it will be very much the worse for us.
And with that encouraging thought, I followed him down.